Hello, I'm Lucy Harper, and welcome to Micropod. Microbiology and microscopes go hand in hand, but there are also biologists who need telescopes, orbiting spacecraft, and robotic vehicles on other planets to do their work. These astrobiologists are searching for extraterrestrial life. Aliens, in other words. Although any alien life likely to be found in our solar system is more likely to be a bacteria. Searching for life is a hot topic at the moment, with a NASA mission about to land on Mars. So this edition of Micropod is an astrobiology special. Our first guest is Dr. Louisa Preston, a postdoctoral research associate in astrobiology at the Open University. And she began by explaining what she could about the tools she uses for her work.
Some technology that I'm working on, I can't go into too much detail. I can't use names. But what I can say is that we're developing a 3D multispectral microscopic imager, which is basically a small optical microscope that can go on the end of a rover arm that we can then move to and from rocks to take images. But what's really good about it is that we can get the images in 3D. We can use visible and infrared light, and infrared spectroscopy is something that I work a lot with. And we're designing it so that we can get the maximum resolution whilst keeping it as far away from the rock as possible, because obviously that's a major danger in us taking instruments right up to rocks, is to damage them or have them to crash into it. When you've sent them all the way to Mars and then you crash them, it's really not what you want to happen. I look at rocks and I find fossils or evidence of organisms within these rocks. And then I use infrared spectroscopy to analyse these individual fossils to try and identify if there are organic compounds in them that may relate to the original organisms that were once there, to prove that they were actually organisms, not just wiggly patterns inside the rocks and stuff like that. And we do it on the Earth, so we can then use it on Mars as well.
So you say you're looking at places on Earth that could be potentially analogues for Mars or the Moon. So what conditions are you looking for, and whereabouts has that search taken you on Earth?
The conditions I look at are what we would probably call extreme conditions, somewhere the humans can't really live. So I look at areas of very high temperature, areas where it's very acidic, or areas where it's extremely cold. They can be cold and hot now, or they can show evidence in the rocks or by some minerals that are there to say that they once were like that. You know, I don't have to find something somewhere really hot and really cold right now. I'm very lucky. This study's taken me to a lot of places. I've looked at hot springs in New Zealand and in Iceland. That was for my PhD. Yes, I did write that PhD myself. I did plan the hot springs in New Zealand and Iceland. I've done a lot of work at Rio Tinto in southwestern Spain, which is a natural acid rock drainage system. Very iron rich, it's blood red, looks just like Mars, full of lots of acid tolerant bacteria. Where else have I been? The Horton Impact Crater, which is in the Canadian High Arctic. It's a 40 million year old impact crater. What's great about it is it has evidence of a big hydrothermal system that once existed there, and also evidence of a crater lake. And these are two types of localities where we think life would definitely have lived on Mars. I mean, impact cratering is ubiquitous among the solar system, so it's a definite site we want to look for. I've also been to Mostaston Impact Crater, which is in Labrador in Canada. We were actually doing a simulated analog mission, so we weren't actually going there to do science as I do it. We were simulating how you send a robot there to collect samples and how you would send astronauts there to collect samples, which is not quite along the same lines, but it's just as important.
Well, I've read that you've devised a database of these analogues. Is the database finished? And if so, can anyone access it?
Yes, we have developed a database. It's still currently in the works. No one can access it right now. The aim is to make it publicly accessible, hopefully by the end of the year, early next year. At the moment, it's got 37 entries, which doesn't sound like a lot, but the amount of information we're putting into this database is huge. It's not just, here is a very cool site that looks like somewhere on Mars, we want to go there. It's, here is the logistics of going there. These are the permits you need. Can you go and take samples from there? These are the scientists that are already working on there. This is the equipment that you'll need. All the sort of nitty-gritty stuff that most of us can't, you know, look up on popular search engines. You know, we need to have someone to tell us. And it's going to be publicly accessible. It's going to be edited by scientists themselves. So we're going to open it up kind of like a wiki, to say, please log on, add your own sites, add your own images. So that's why we're starting off with hopefully 50 by the time we get it up and going, but then it'll just continue to grow from user additions.
Oh, fantastic. You talked a little bit about bacteria just now. Can you expand on that? Where do microbes feature in your work?
They feature in two senses. First off, all the environments I look at, as I said, are extreme. So the main microorganisms I look at, we would term extremophiles. And my favourite phrase to describe them are extreme lovers, because that's the Latin definition. So I look at sort of the thermophiles, the ones that live around hot springs, geothermal settings. I also look at acidophiles, and the acidophiles relate very well to Rio Tinto, which is one of my main field areas. It's a very chemolitho-autotrophic system. Never get that right. So at Rio Tinto, obviously, I study the living organisms. We culture them from the river waters. There are streamers all the way along the river. But the reason I look at Rio Tinto is because it's a fantastic natural laboratory. So I can look at these organisms alive now. We can culture them and we can study them. But then we also have rocks that date back there 2 million years. And as you go back through all these levels of rocks, you find very similar features. You find all these organisms that look exactly the same as the ones that are in the river right now. So when we study these using infrared and scanning electron microscopes, we can look at the organic compounds that are still preserved in the rocks, compare them to what the organisms are like now, and we can see a continuum about how these organisms have been preserved over time, and then that can then relate to Mars and what we might expect if we go to Mars now, and what we might be able to find.
Just a little tiny question now. Where do you see the future for astrobiology?
Brighter and bigger than ever before, to be honest. Ironically, it's astrobiology is a study of something that we have yet to actually find. It's a subject that's born out of nothing, effectively. It's born out of a wish to find something, not that we've ever found it. There are so many things left for us to look at. I mean, we have Mars, Europa, Titan, all the planets and moons that we think there might be life. More are becoming apparent every time. I mean, Mercury and the moon are starting to have potential evidence of water, so these might be open to us. We've got missions coming up, such as Curiosity and ExoMars, and now JUICE, and we're all working towards a sample return mission for Mars. Asteroids and comets, these are full of carbon. We want to understand where this carbon came from. There's carbon in the interstellar medium, but we still don't know that much about it. And then with Kepler, we're starting to find all these exoplanets, Earth-like exoplanets, the same size as us, and the next step, probably in the next decade, is to try and identify life or signatures of life around these planets. I mean, astrobiology is just going to keep growing. As long as our technology and our willingness grow with it, I think astrobiology is going to become quite powerful in the future.
The extremely well-travelled astrobiologist, Dr. Louisa Preston from the Open University. Our second guest is another astrobiologist, as well as being the author of Life in the Universe, A Beginner's Guide to Astrobiology, and the children's book, My Tourist Guide to the Solar System. Dr. Lewis Dartnell is from the University College London, and he's especially interested in robotic missions to Mars. And, as I discovered when I met up with Lewis in a rather noisy cafe, he'll be keeping a close eye on NASA's Mars Science Laboratory and the Curiosity rover that's about to land on the red planet.
The location has been specifically selected. It's called Gale Crater, and it's a place where we're pretty certain there's been lots of water in the past, and probably even standing water, so it's a kind of big lake. And this is exactly the kind of environment that is useful for life. It's the kind of environment we find teeming with life on Earth. It's the kind of environment we think life might need to get started in the first place. So what Curiosity will be able to tell us is what conditions Mars had a long, long time ago, whether life could ever have got started there, if Mars was a habitable world like the Earth, or perhaps always been a dead world. And depending on what we find out from Curiosity, and we're hoping we'll find sure signs of ancient water and maybe even organic molecules, the building blocks of life on the surface of Mars. And the next mission that I'm directly involved in is called ExoMars, and it's a European mission. So this is us guys, this is us working with the French and the Spanish and the Dutch and the Italians to build this rover, launch it to Mars, and specifically look for signs of life. So go the next step, your curiosity will be able to do.
3, 2, 1, main engine start, 0, and liftoff of the Atlas V with Curiosity, seeking clues to the planetary puzzle about life on Mars.
The search for life on Mars involves looking for organic molecules and microorganisms. Lewis specialises in using Raman spectroscopy to look for life signatures, and this is the instrument that will fly to Mars on board ExoMars.
This is an instrument that's never ever been tried before on a space mission, but it's really proven itself on Earth in finding life in some of the hardiest habitats on our planet, like in Antarctica in the South Pole or the Atacama Desert in South America. And Rahman is very sensitive at kind of picking out these tiny little pockets of life, which might have otherwise been invisible to you.
Wow, can't wait to hear the results of this.
Neither can I.
When not designing and running computer simulations, he does also get to do some microbiology.
Most of the time I haven't been doing exactly sophisticated microbiological stuff. I'm interested in growing up cells, so using, you know, culturing techniques and an incubator and stuff to grow up cells to get good samples that I can then do stuff to and analyse with instruments. So I've come from a biological background, I am a biologist,
yeah.
And having now moved into all this planetary science and space physics, but I'm mostly growing up cells, so things like cyanobacteria, analysing them with things like this Raman spectroscopy to look for their signatures of life, and then zapping them with high doses of radiation to simulate the radiation it would get on Mars, and then analysing it again and then seeing what changes you get. So I'm trying to work out how quickly that signature of life, that evidence of life, is kind of rubbed out by the environment of Mars. How long have we got to spot it before it's been completely destroyed?
Do you think that we will find life on another planet like Earth? Just a small question there.
I mean, kind of obviously, I've chosen my career in this, so I'm putting a certain amount of faith in it.
Yeah.
But actually, my hunch is that there's no obvious signs of life on Mars. There's no oxygen in its atmosphere, there's no clear global signs of life. It's going to be hard to find if it is there at all. So my hunch is that within our lifetimes, we will find life on another planet, but it won't be nearby in our solar system. It'll be far away on a much more Earth-like planet orbiting a star in the night sky. Because you can do certain techniques to look for clear signs of life in the atmosphere of worlds from very, very far away. And obviously, looking out in the night sky, there's far more potentially Earth-like planets out there than there are in our own solar system. So playing the numbers game, it's actually probable we'll find remote life before we find our neighbours, which will be frustrating because we can't do anything with that remote life. So that's why I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that we do find something on Mars and perhaps bring it back to Earth to then be able to study.
I was going to ask a slightly sensitive question. I'll ask it anyway. Feel free not to answer.
I'm slightly nervous now, Lucy.
No. My question is, why look for it in the first place?
You asked me why I think it's important to find anything.
Yeah.
For me, at least, it's one of those no-brainer questions that finding life beyond our planet, it's not going to put a new gadget in your pocket, or at least it might not do immediately. It's not going to put a new anti-cancer drug in the hospitals. But it is one of those mind-blowingly fundamental things to find out. We are not alone. So if we make that discovery, we'll know that we are not alone in this cosmos around us. And I think that'll be as significant as realising that the Earth isn't flat. But in the shorter term, I think there's a better answer that in trying to do difficult things, like sending robots to Mars to look for microbial life there, or big space telescopes to look for ecosystems and other Earth-like planets, you're solving problems, you're coming up with stuff that then does immediately go into the high street, or in other applications in the real world. And just within the realm of robotics, stuff that's being developed for exploring other planets is being used for robots, you know, to sniff out bombs or to search for survivors in kind of earthquake rubble. A lot of the techniques for extracting organic molecules out of Martian rocks are now being applied to extracting hydrocarbons, i.e. oil, out of hard-to-reach places that weren't previously economically viable. So, I mean, it's all about spin-off technology, and you don't know what you're going to discover until you try.
Dr. Lewis Dartnell from University College London, gamely competing against a cappuccino machine to explain the importance of astrobiology and discovering life on Mars. See you next time for another edition of Micropod.